Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome to the Science of Success. Introducing your host, Matt Bodner.
Welcome to the Science of Success, the number one evidence-based growth podcast on the internet, with more than 1 million downloads and listeners in over 100 countries.
In this episode, we discuss the habits of high achievers, talk about the motivation myth, dig into the habits, routines, and strategies you can use to achieve more in less time. We talk about balancing hustle and hard work versus recovery, and much more with our guest, Jeff Hayden.
I'm going to give you three quick reasons why you should join our email list today by going to successpodcast.com and signing up right on the homepage. There's some amazing stuff that's only available to our email subscribers, so be sure to sign up. First, you're going to get awesome free guides that we create based on listener demand, including our most popular guide, How to Organize and Remember Everything, which you can get completely for free, along with another surprise bonus guide when you sign up and join the email list today. Next, you're going to get a curated weekly email from us every single Monday called Mindset Monday. Listeners have been absolutely loving this email. It's short, simple, filled with evidence-based strategies, articles, TED Talks, and more that we found interesting in the last week. Lastly, you're going to get an exclusive chance to shape the show, vote on guests, submit your own questions to our guests, change our intro music, and much, much more. So be sure to go to successpodcast.com, sign up to join the email list right on the homepage, or if you're driving around, if you're out and about, if you're on the go right now, just text the word SMARTER, that's S-M-A-R-T-E-R, to the number 44222. That's SMARTER to 44222.
In our previous episode, we explored emotion and facial expression in depth with one of the world's top experts, the psychologist who pioneered much of the work in this field, Dr. Paul Ekman. We discussed the 6 to 7 major universal emotions, how emotional reactions are unchanged across cultures, ages, even species. We talked about microexpressions, reading people's faces, how to manage and control your own emotions, and much, much more. If you want to learn more about emotion, listen to that episode. Before we get started today with Jeff, I just wanted to throw out one little thing. We did have a few challenges with the audio quality on Jeff's end, and I wanted to give you a heads up about that. We've done the best we could in editing and post-production to clean it up, but the audio was a little bit rough. Just wanted to give everybody a heads up. We still thought the episode had enough value that we wanted to share the lessons that Jeff brought to us in that episode. Here's the show.
Today, we have another exciting guest on the show, Jeff Hayden. Jeff is a contributing editor for Inc.com, an author, and a ghostwriter. He's ghostwritten nearly 40 nonfiction books, including 4 Amazon bestsellers. And he's the author of the upcoming book, The Motivation Myth: How High Achievers Really Set Themselves Up to Win. And his articles on Inc.com alone were read by more than 20 million people in 2016. Jeff, welcome to The Science of Success.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. One of my favorite things to do is talk to people that are smarter than me, so I'm going to be in hog heaven today.
You're very kind. You're very kind. Well, Jeff, I'd love to, you know, for listeners who might not be familiar with you, I'd love to start out and hear a little bit about kind of your background and your story and kind of what brought you into the world of personal development.
Wow, this will be really brief because I'm a pretty boring guy. I worked in manufacturing for about 20 years and worked my way up to where I was running a plant. Thought that was my dream, and it was my dream for a long time. And I got there, and like many dreams, once you're there, you realize that it's not nearly as exciting as you hoped it would be, and it doesn't become your lifelong ambition. So actually, my wife talked me into trying to do something else, and I started writing. And I was really, really poor at it at first and had no audience and had very limited success, but I plugged away and just kept working, which in all the successful people that I talk to when I write for Inc., that is the way they succeed. They're not incredibly talented. They're not, you know, they don't have some flash of special something. They're the people that outwork and outthink and out-hustle other people. And so that's what I tried to do. So in the process of that, I guess the best way to put this is in the process of talking to people who have achieved really big things, I got really interested in how they do that. And that's where my interest in personal development really came from. I think everybody's interested in personal development, but I really got into it because it was fascinating to see people who had done these things and to realize that it wasn't, again, this special something. It was what they did, not who they were. It was what they did.
I think that's a critical point. And this idea that, you know, top achievers don't necessarily have some kind of sort of special sauce, but really it's about the actions that they take and you know, what they do as opposed to who they are or where they started.
Yeah, I've met a few that have egos big enough to think that they were just born that way. But the vast majority say, you know, wow, I worked really, really hard and I got lucky. And I think the luck part is overstated and the work hard part and work smart part is understated. But that's really the key.
So what are some of the other kind of common themes you've seen from interviewing, ghostwriting for, and studying and working with so many top achievers?
The biggest one to me is the power of process or the power of routine. People that achieve really big things set out to do so by figuring out what it will take to get there and mapping that out and creating a blueprint and then following that blueprint every day, which is what led me to my whole motivation myth theme, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. But it's the power of doing the right things every day without fail, which is not always easy to do. But if you do that, success may not be guaranteed, but it's really close. And you'll probably get to at least 90 or 95% of whatever it is you wanted to do.
So how do we determine what the right things to do are?
My favorite, and it's actually a chapter in the book, it's called Do What the Pros Do. I think of what a lot of us like to do. We all think we're individuals. It's like that Monty Python thing where we're all individuals and the one guy says, I'm not. We all think we're individuals. And so we all have to have this special process or special routine or special approach that is just our own because we are so unique. And actually, we're not. And I know I'm not. So if you look around and find someone who has done whatever it is you want to do. And it could be personal, it could be fitness, it could be business, it could be whatever you want it to be. And really look at what they did to get there and create a blueprint based on that and say, if it was good enough for them, it's good enough for me. Too many people try to reinvent a perfectly good wheel, and there are all kinds of good wheels out there. Pick one and start and follow that. And if it is hard, that's okay, because the hard part is what actually gets you where you want to be. And then later on down the road, as you get good at whatever it is you're doing, you can start to adapt some of that stuff to who you actually are. And I have a couple of examples of that. But there's no reason to wait until you've figured out this perfect process for yourself when there are all kinds of awesome processes out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite mental models, the idea of studying what others have done to achieve the goals you want to achieve, and then working the process and doing exactly what they've done. many of the things that I've achieved in life are a direct result of doing exactly that, studying closely people who have achieved what I want, and then trying to emulate and do exactly what they did or follow the process that they did, and not spending a bunch of mental energy on reinventing the wheel, but really just trying to cultivate a process based on what has worked for others.
Yeah, a good example of this, and it's a personal thing, but some years ago, I was way out of shape and I couldn't run because my knees are terrible and I'm old, and but I needed something cardio related, and somebody recommended that I try cycling, and I thought, okay, I can try that. So, but I hated the idea of it. Hated a bike, hated riding a bike. I went riding the first time and thought it was like hot death. Just hated it. So what I did was I found a local guy, a mountain biker, Jeremiah Bishop. He's a professional cyclist and has been for about 20 years, and he's won national championships and all sorts of stuff. And so I just sat down with him and said, I want to ride your Gran Fondo. It's like 110 miles, four mountains, 11,000 feet of climbing. You know, it's this disastrous thing. And I said, if you were me and you had 4 months to get ready, what would you do? And he laid it out for me. And the first day, I had to go riding for like 2 hours, and you know, it was awful. And I thought I would die, but I stuck with it. And within a few weeks, I felt stronger. I was fitter. I was in better shape. I saw that there was light at the end of that tunnel. And so I just followed his plan. Was it perfect? No, because about halfway through, we realized that I don't respond well to lots of recovery time. I'm better if I do things every day. So we quit building in rest periods, and I did well with that, but I still followed his plan. So that idea that we're unique and we have to find that special something, I think that holds a lot of people back because it causes you to wait. And really, success starts with action.
You know, to me, that's one of the central ideas of achieving results, this idea that many people get confused and think that you need to be motivated to start taking action. But in many ways, it's actually the reverse, that just starting, taking action, getting started, making a little bit of progress is really what ultimately creates motivation.
What happens is we read stories of people who, when they were like 5 years old, figured out their life's purpose, and that's what they became. And we assume that that has to be how it works for us. I don't know anybody like that. I know there are people out there like that, but I don't personally know anyone like that. And so waiting for that burst of inspiration that will help you find your passion, it'll give you all that motivation you need to carry on through the obstacles and the roadblocks and blah, 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 then it means you wait forever. And I think it actually works in reverse. I think success, even a really small success, it makes you feel good about yourself. That gives you motivation. And then that causes you to be willing the next day to try again, which leads to success, which leads to motivation, which leads to trying again. So I think the motivation actually comes from the action and the small bits of success, not from this lightning bolt that you get up front. And the cool thing about it is that lightning bolt will always wear off, no matter who you are. But if every day you're doing the right things, and if nothing else, you're feeling good about the fact that today you accomplished what you set out to accomplish, even if it doesn't make you feel like you're getting any better, if you did what you said you were going to do, that feels good. If you think about days when, you know, you finally sit back after your day is over and feel like, wow, I had a really good day, doesn't mean that you bought a new car, got a new house, got a promotion, got all that stuff. That's nice. But usually what makes us feel good is, hey, I had stuff I wanted to do today, and I did it. I worked hard. I did what I wanted to do. I feel good about that. And that carries over into the next day. So to me, motivation comes from action, not from inspiration.
And I think many people fall into the trap of sitting around waiting for inspiration to strike, and they end up wasting a tremendous amount of time. You know, I think your example is a great one, because in maybe a business context, it's easier to think about, okay, action creates motivation. But for someone who's an incredibly prolific writer, you know, you've written almost 40 books, you know, in a creative sphere, people think, oh, I have to wait for my muse to strike. But it doesn't seem like that's necessarily the case.
No, I think your muse comes from the action. You get ideas from doing things. You get inspiration from actually trying things. I've never had the blank piece of paper or blank screen syndrome, because every day I get up and my job is to write. And I know that. And so I have a plan. I know what I'm going to start with. And I kind of roll on. And actually, that's one of my favorite like tips for being productive all day. And I'll give you two really quick. One is the idea that the night before you decide, what is my most important thing I need to do tomorrow? What matters most? Set that up the night before so that when you get up and you get to your office or wherever it is you work, that everything is ready for you to do that. You don't do other stuff. You don't check your email. You don't nothing. That's what you're going to do. And you knock that out. And when you're done, then you can do your other stuff. But by completing what was really important, you get that motivation to work hard the rest of the day. And it builds momentum for the rest of the day because you achieved what you set out to achieve. You feel good about yourself. That's motivating. And that will create the momentum. And for me, that creates this really cool cycle of, hey, I did that. That was great. Now I'm going to do this. I did that. That was great. That's easier way into the day thing. I guess it works for some people, but I don't know anybody that's really successful that does that. It's more of a, let me do something right away that makes me feel good about myself, not in a happy way, but in a success and achievement way. That'll make you feel good. And that will give you the motivation to keep going. That is my favorite tip to give people who say they have a hard time getting going.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that the idea of setting out kind of your most important task the night before is one of the cornerstone productivity strategies that I implement in my own life as well. And, you know, I even will basically set out on Sunday, I'll kind of do an audit of my previous week, and then I'll put together basically, you know, one to two, what I just call MITs or most important tasks.
Yep.
For every day of the week. So I'll set out, all right, this is my Monday MIT, this is my Tuesday MIT. And the idea is basically as soon as I start working, before I get sucked into email and, you know, all this other busy work and everything else, that I execute those things basically first thing in the morning. And the goal of that kind of Sunday review process is to figure out, okay, what are the big levers that I can pull? What are the big rocks that I need to move? What are the few things that I can really execute on that are going to make the biggest difference in my business and sort of towards progressing towards my goals? And to me, just even if I do nothing that entire week except for execute those four or five most important tasks, that keeps the ball rolling forward and keeps creating, you know, the most amount of results possible despite distraction and lack of productivity and busy work and everything else.
That's a really good point, and it leads to, it's kind of like the same thing as the environmental architecture that people use sometimes to eliminate choices so that they do the things that they want to do. So what you're doing on Sunday night is you're actually eliminating choices during the week about what you might decide to do because you know what you need to do. So you don't have to sit there and think about it. You don't have to decide, is this more important? Is that more important? Like in that moment, which is in the moment is usually when we make the wrong decision. And so you're creating a system where these are the things you're going to do and you don't even have to think about it. It's like the guy that brings his lunch to work every day and it's a healthy lunch. He doesn't have to decide what he's going to eat. He doesn't have to choose to make a healthier choice and drain a little bit of that willpower. It's just what you do. And that's your system. And so when you have something like that, that is just what you do, it's really, really easy to follow. And it kind of fits into this. There's research around two sets of words. I can't and I don't. And this may get boring, so stop me if it does. Researchers tried an experiment where they wanted someone to start or a group of people to start a new habit, a new program. And so they each were different sets of them were given different things that they would say. Some of them would say, I can't do this because I'm trying to do that. Others said, I don't do this. And then another group didn't have any strategy to use at all. What's funny about it is that 8 out of the 10 people that said, I don't, actually stuck to the program. 1 out of 10 that said, I can't, stuck to the program. And the people that didn't have a strategy at all, 3 out of 10 of them actually stuck to it. So saying I can't is actually worse than having no strategy at all. And the theory behind it is, if you say I don't, you're identifying with whatever that is. So if it's, I don't miss workouts, or I don't, let's see, fail to follow up with people, whatever it might be, if that's who you are, then it's not a choice. It's just what you do. If it's, I can't, you're opening yourself up to, I do have a choice. So I can't have that bowl of ice cream, but you know what? I think I will, because it's okay right now. And you come up with some kind of rationale for why that works. So in a long-winded way, that goes back to that whole choice architecture of, if you lay out your most important tasks and you decide them when you have time to reflect and it's not a momentary decision, you're much more likely to accomplish them because you're not making choices anymore.
Yeah, I think that's great. And, you know, we love research examples on the show, so I appreciate you kind of bringing that example in as well.
Well, I have another one then for early in the morning. I talked about, I have like my most important thing to do. Some days, though, I choose to get up and work out first. And again, that's a choice and it's part of my program. There are a whole bunch of reasons for that. If you're into intermittent fasting, it's the perfect time to work out. If you have a busy day and it's hard for you to get to the gym in the evening, it's a perfect time to work out because you can always get up early. But there's research that shows that working out first thing, and we're not talking hard. You can do 20 minutes of like moderate cardio, which is getting your heart rate to about, say, 110 beats a minute, which is not super high. If you do 20 minutes of that, you actually improve your mood for like the next 12 hours of the day. So if you want to feel better and feel a little more like upbeat, not just physically, but emotionally, if you do that first thing in the morning, that kicks off the rest of your day. Whereas if you work out at night, well, you're going to go to bed in a few hours, so you lose some of that 12 hours that you could have taken advantage of. The key to doing that, though, is if you work out, and even if you work out hard, you have to have a process that says, okay, I'm going to do that, going to take my shower, going to eat or whatever it is, and I'm going to roll right into whatever is my most important task. If you work out and then say, oh, wow, that was tough, I better lay back for a while, you've lost all that momentum that you've built by getting something done right away, and you don't get that cool little virtuous flywheel of success equals motivation equals success equals motivation. So working out first thing is an awesome way to start your day, both physiologically but also emotionally. But you have to create a routine that allows you to go right from that to other things that will also keep you rolling.
I agree. I'm a huge proponent of morning workouts as well. But you're right. The critical point is you have to be able to transition from that workout right into that sort of MIT most important task before you get sucked into the whirlwind of emails and phone calls and, you know, all of this incessant kind of nonsense that can end up distracting you from the really high leverage activities.
That leads to an interesting point about that whole rolling into the next thing. There's a book that's out. It's fairly recent. It's called High Performance Habits. It's by Brendan Burchard. And he studied, I don't know, hundreds of people that have net worths of way more than mine, very successful people. And he looked at how they sustain their energy throughout the day, because the average person by 2 or 3 o'clock, if you've been working pretty hard, you're starting to tail off. And there are tons of strategies out there for people that say, hey, you're going to tail off. So, you know, do stuff that doesn't require creativity later in the day. And he found that the high performing people didn't approach it that way. They thought they could sustain energy all through the day. But what they did is they found recharge moments between activities. So if you're in a meeting and it takes 45 minutes and you've got 10 minutes until your next meeting starts, most people will use that time to like catch up on emails or take care of a phone call or do that other stuff that drains more energy. The high performance people said, I'll deal with that stuff later. For the next 10 minutes, I'm going to recharge so that I am back in the right frame of mind and I have the right energy for whatever my task is next. So for some of them, it was meditating. Others was a snack. Some took a walk. But they had something that allowed them to actually generate energy from that intermittent period rather than draining more of it away. And so, you know, he's got guys that and women that do, you know, 12, 14 hour days and end the day really strong because they are constantly recharging during those little bursts. So back to your original point, that's what that morning is for. You get up, you work out, you get the benefits of that, but then you leverage that right into something else that keeps you rolling and not that causes you to just sort of sit back. Because if it's me, if I start the day slow, my whole day is slow. I don't have the oomph to go from vegging for an hour to then converting to high energy the rest of the day. I have to start strong.
You know, and that kind of balance between stress and recovery is something that a lot of people at the top of the performance psychology field really think about and write about. People like Josh Waitzkin, who's one of my all-time favorite sort of performance psychology experts, or Michael Gervais, we've interviewed on the show in the past, talk about these ideas of having these undulating periods between stress and recovery and how vital recovery is to peak performance.
Yep. Yeah. And it's the same with, like, you know, if you work out, you're familiar with interval training, you know, and it's the same principle there where you do a burst, you have a small recovery period, you do another burst, and over time that actually makes you fitter than the person who just grinds it out. And I think with high performing people, the ability to go in those intervals and to do a burst and a recovery and a burst and recovery is what makes them have greater stamina, period, which leads to great, and I mean not stamina just physically, but mentally and decision-making and everything, that leads them then to be able to do that over longer periods of time without feeling like they've gotten so drained that they need a break or they need a vacation right away or they just have to stop. So that the antidote, I think, to burnout is not to work less, but to create more chances to recharge.
So how do you think about balancing the kind of notion and the idea of, you know, sort of hustle and hard work and, you know, he who works hardest and longest wins versus the importance of kind of stress and recovery and having these recovery periods? How do you, what's the right balance between those two things?
if we knew that, we'd be rich. I think that starts with that hard work and hustle. There are plenty of people that work hard, but they're not necessarily working hard at the right things. So I think that it's a little bit like your Sunday night routine where you step back and say, okay, what are the right things that I need to do this week? And you're going to work really hard at them, but you're going to identify those. I know a lot of people that start businesses that, you know, they work endless amounts of hours, but a lot of what they're doing doesn't generate revenue, doesn't create new customers, doesn't create efficiency. It's just work. And there is a difference between the right things and just working. So that, I think, is the place to start. Like for me, some years ago, I got pretty busy and I don't have a staff. And I was writing a lot of books and writing all kinds of stuff. And I got tied up with lots of things that were ancillary to that. And I finally one day kind of step back and say, okay, where do I create my value? I create value by writing, and all the other stuff is interesting and it's busy work, but it doesn't actually generate any revenue and it doesn't create value. So I stripped away a bunch of it and I farmed out the little bit that was left. So I think that's the first place to start, is what are the right things and what leads to success in a predictable way? Then I think you have to kind of take a step back and say, okay, what supports that? So for me, fitness helps support what I do and I enjoy it. So I could do that. Clearly, family and all the other things around also do that as well. So I think if you focus on the right things and do those, you can free up some time that allows you to do the recharge things. But there is no one size fits all, clearly. What do you think?
You know, I think it comes down to, kind of as you said, one of the most important things, and this harkens back to sort of the Sunday ritual and all these other pieces of the puzzle that we've been talking about. But it's all about what I call high leverage thinking, which is basically the idea of identifying the leverage points of where it's worth it to invest your time and where you should be outsourcing, delegating, et cetera. And constantly asking yourself that question, you know, do I need to do this? How can I outsource this or delegate this to someone else? What are the really key things that I personally need to be focusing my time on? And I think if you can master that, then, you know, it's almost a recursive process where you keep applying the same set of questions to whatever current sort of set of problems you have it are. And, you know, every time you apply that set of questions, you weed out some tasks, you delegate some tasks, et cetera. And then you do that again and again and again, and you keep getting more and more leverage as you apply that.
That set of questions things is interesting. And there's, in the book, I write about Herb Kelleher. He's the CEO of Southwest Airlines, and he makes dozens, if not hundreds, of decisions today. But basically, he applies the same framework to each one of those questions. Will this make Southwest Airlines the low-cost provider? Does that in any way help us be the low-cost provider? If it does, then he'll look at it, and maybe it's a yes. If it doesn't, then it becomes a no. And I think that's important for people to do, not to be the low-cost provider, but to figure out, what is it that you want to be? If you're an entrepreneur, will this help my business grow? If it's yes, yeah, look at it. If it isn't, then it's a no. If you're trying to get fitter, will this make me fitter? Will this help me be whatever it is I'm trying to become? If it will, cool. If it doesn't, Well, then you can set that aside. And if you just apply that one question to pretty much anything that comes up during your day, it actually strips away a lot of that fluff and gets you to the core of what you're really trying to do.
You know, and circling back to kind of the idea we were talking about a little bit earlier, and just another thing that made me think of when I think about action creating motivation, you know, one of the pieces that really seems effective for me, it's not just even about, you know, I think the MITs and the daily kind of executing most high leverage tasks every day is critical. And I think that's how you make the big, you know, the big moves and the big changes in your business and in your life. But I think to get the motivation, even sometimes to get into sort of a productivity mindset, sometimes for me, the smallest little things make a big difference. And that's, you know, I think a couple of days ago, I just had a stack of mail that had been sitting on my desk and I was kind of listless and not really doing anything. And I just went through the mail, you know, I answered a couple of the letters. I wrote a check and like put in an envelope, mailed it, started doing all this stuff. And then, you know, like an hour and a half later, I had like done all these things. And it all started with that really simple act of just cleaning up that pile of mail that had been sitting there. And sometimes, you know, just cleaning off your desk or just organizing something, those little tiny wins can in many cases kind of snowball into a productivity burst that will last in many cases for a couple hours.
That to me strikes me, I kind of characterize that as the breaking a sweat principle, where, you know, if you're thinking about, well, like when I was cycling a lot, sometimes I would have to go on like 5-hour rides or something. And I would, you know, ahead of time, you're just dreading the crap out of it. Don't want to go, don't want to do it. But if you can just get started and break that first sweat, then all that stuff goes away and then you're engaged and then you're rolling. So for you to pick up that first piece of mail, that's all you really needed to kind of get past that hump. But sometimes it's really hard to think about starting. And I think that's because the distance between here and there, put quotes around both of those, is so great. If you're, I don't know, let's go bigger. If you're trying to, say you want to run a marathon, but you're not a runner. If you go out and run a mile today and that was hard and you let yourself think about the fact that someday you have to run 26, the distance between here and there is massive and it's demotivating and depressing and you will probably stop. But if all you decided was, hey, I'm going to run my mile today, that's my goal, that's my routine, and if I run that mile, I get to feel good about myself because I did what I was supposed to do, that carries you on into the next day. So, you know, for you, you pick up the one, you do something with it, you throw it away or you put it in the mail. That's cool. Let me do the next and the next. And so you just focus on what's next and suddenly you get to really big places. That's the power of numbers to me, where if you create a routine that just allows you to accumulate numbers, then you can get to a really cool place at the other end. See, last year, like I did 100,000 push-ups. That was something I decided I would do. And I broke it down into 374 a day. If on January 1st, I had thought about the fact I had to do 100,000, it would have been hot death. But all I had to do was 374. And I can do 374. And by the end of the year, I'd done 100,000, which is a meaningless accomplishment other than that it proved to me that if you put your head down and do the work, you can eventually pop up and look around and say, wow, I did something really cool.
I think that's great. And that, you know, that is kind of the next topic I wanted to dive into, which is you've written and talked a lot about this, the power of process and routine and how that, you know, you touched on this kind of at the opening of the conversation, but how these routines in many cases are really kind of the secrets that underpin successful achievers.
I think a routine, when you first start to do something, let's say you get promoted and you're a supervisor. Okay, you've got the title, you know, maybe you've got the clipboard, you've got all the stuff. So you're a supervisor, but that doesn't mean you're a leader. People who are leaders have actually motivated people, inspired people, developed people, trained people, brought groups together, help people achieve things. There's all that stuff that goes into being a leader. And by having a routine that allows you to do that, at some point you don't look at yourself as a supervisor anymore. You look at yourself as a leader. In the fitness world, if you start out trying to run a marathon, well, you're somebody that's trying to run a marathon. Somewhere down the road, though, you become a runner. And that becomes this intrinsic thing that allows you to shape how you see the world and how you see yourself, which is a very motivating thing. When you feel like you're a runner, it's much easier to go running. When you feel like you're a leader, it's much easier to walk into that room and try to inspire the people that work for you. So that routine takes you to really cool places, which I know is not the question that you asked me. But the power of routine is that it allows you to start to see yourself differently. And when you see yourself differently, that informs your actions and makes what you do much, much easier. If you're a parent, you don't have to motivate yourself to take care of your kids. You're a parent. You take care of that. So you can use that power of routine to help you become other things, which will then make it really, really easy to do the things that you need to do because that's who you are.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hiring the right person takes time. Time that you often don't have. But you shouldn't let a time crunch get in the way of finding the right candidates for your business. That's why LinkedIn is the best place to post your job. In fact, I was on LinkedIn Jobs this morning looking for candidates to fill a key role in one of my businesses. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with hard and soft skills you're looking for so that you can hire the right person quickly. You can look for things like collaboration, creativity, and adaptability, looking beyond just work skills and resumes to connect you with the candidates who are a perfect match for your business. That's how LinkedIn makes sure that your job post gets in front of the people you actually want to hire, because they have a much better ability to get a deep insight into exactly who is the right candidate for you and your business. Find the right person meant for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want, and the first $50 is on them. Just visit linkedin.com/success. Again, that's linkedin.com/success to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. And how do you... For somebody who's thinking about kind of this daunting task or goal, you know, let's say the 100,000 push-ups, how do you divorce that end goal from the kind of day-to-day activity so that you can stay motivated?
That's something that I have found, at least by talking to incredibly successful people. They have that ultimate goal, and it's as if they set the goal, but then they forget that. And they focus on all the things that it would take to get them there. So it's a weird little mental shift you have to make, but you really have to just say, yeah, that's my end goal. That's cool. I know that's where I'm going, But what I really care about is the routine and the process that will help me get to that place. And it takes a little bit of time to adjust to. But if you give yourself 3 or 4 days, like with the push-up thing, I gave myself 3 or 4 days and I said, no matter what, no matter how this feels, I'm at least going to get to Friday. By Friday, I had started to embrace the, you know, all I really have to do is check this off on my little calendar. And that's cool. And I've done that. And that feels good. And I, for the most part, had forgotten about the end result because I really was just worried about the day. That leads me, it's kind of a tangent, but it leads me to some other research that shows that people who talk about their intentions are much less likely to follow through on those intentions. So let's say that you plan to hike the Appalachian Trail. It's from Georgia to Maine, runs up the Eastern Seaboard. Plenty of people have done it, but it's like 2,200 miles, I think. Let's say you want to do that. And so you say to me, hey, I'm going to hike the Appalachian Trail. And you talk about the stuff you're going to buy. And you talk about the fact you're going to get a trail name because everybody gets a nickname and they go by the nickname, not by their real name. You talk about all that stuff. Research shows that the act of just talking about that makes you much less likely to do it because you've gotten some of the little emotional and mental kick out of imagining it that you would have actually gotten from achieving it. So if you, and I'll tell that to people and they will say, yeah, but I need the power of peer pressure and I need to tell people my plans because, you know, that way they can hold me to them. That's really cool. And if you need that, that's great. Tell people what you're going to do. Tell people your routine to get there, not the actual getting there. So if it's preparing to hike the Appalachian Trail, tell people, hey, for the next month, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And then if they want to check in with you to make sure you've done the things that you need to do to prepare, that's cool. And there's your peer pressure, but not I plan to do X and then talk about it as if you've already gotten there, because that kills your motivation to actually do that stuff. It's a little bit like there's other research that shows that the act of planning a vacation is almost as fun as taking the vacation. And so people that spend months planning a vacation get all that fun and anticipation and enjoyment out of the vacation. And actually, once they've taken it, their happiness set point goes back down to where it was before they took the vacation. It's the same thing. You're imagining yourself in a certain place or doing a certain thing, and that's fun. And yet that also makes it harder to do the thing if doing whatever that is requires hard work and dedication and some degree of perseverance.
Yeah, I think it's the principle exactly as you described it, which is this idea that just by talking about it, you're getting some of the kind of psychological and emotional rewards of dreaming about achieving it. And mm-hmm. So you're demotivating yourself in some sense.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, you know, I know you've had Charles Duhigg on your podcast, and, you know, he's obviously an expert on habits and creating habits and stuff. And one of his methods for, you know, building a new habit is you've got the stimulus and you've got the action and then you have the reward. And that dreaming and thinking about a thing is a reward, or maybe it's a tangible reward. Like if we'll use my marathon example again. If you have to go run 5 miles today and your reward at the other end is things for yourself, I think that reward wears off after a while because you're used to it. So a much better reward is to, and this is what I used to do when I was cycling a lot. I would come home, get off the bike, sit in a little stool outside, drink some water, and just think, wow, I just rode 55 miles in X amount of time. That feels awesome. And I would just sit there and feel good about the fact of what I did. And that became my reward. And I sort of had to train myself to see that as the reward. But I got to where I really looked forward to that because it was that chance to kind of sit there quietly in yourself and say, I did that. That was hard. And I did that. And that feels really good. And if you can create that intrinsic reward rather than the, you know, if I go running, then I get to have a bowl of ice cream kind of reward, that takes you to that place where you become something, and it makes it much more easy to stick with your routine because you don't need the external reward. You're getting it from inside.
So I want to get specific and talk a little bit about your writing habit and your writing process. You know, how did you develop that process and what does your kind of habit look like? Because, I mean, you know, many people fantasize about writing kind of a single book and get overwhelmed and never even, you know, can complete that task. And writing 40 books is obviously tremendously more, plus all the articles and everything else. You know, how did you go from somebody who was a factory manager to an incredibly prolific writer? And how did you develop that process? And what does it look like today?
The early motivation was that I left a very good job and went to a job where, if it was to be, it was up to me. And if money was going to come in, I had to produce. And so that was incredibly motivating. And it caused me to work a lot of hours. But if we talk about books, you can think, hey, wow, a book is, say, 300 pages. That's so much. I don't know how I'm going to get from here to there. But a book is really just a series of connected ideas or connected strategies or tips or whatever it may be that takes you on a journey from A to Z and leaves you at the other end, hopefully motivated, informed, maybe a little entertained, ready to do something, at least if it's nonfiction. And if it's in the how-to kind of world, which is where I tend to live. It's just a series, and it's just a lot of little chunks. And so that fits perfectly within my idea of process, because I don't have to write the whole book. I have to, if it's today, I have to write this, this, and this. And I know that that will then lead to other stuff, and that will lead to other things that I've mapped out. And I'm confident enough now that if I get to a certain place and I say, wow, this took a different turn, I found some research that caused me to look at this differently, I talked to someone that caused me to change my perspective on this, well, then I can adapt, and it all becomes part of a whole. But a book is a lot of little chunks along the way. So my goal with anything that I do, because I'm the king of being afraid of the too daunting challenge, I can turn something easy into something that seems impossible really easily in my mind. So I just break it down into what I have to do today, tomorrow, the next day, what are the pieces and parts, and let's start assembling that puzzle. And each time I get a little piece or part done, I feel good about that, because it's like, okay, got that, connected this, put that together. And, you know, someday you wake up and you've got a manuscript, which I know sounds simplistic, but it really is that way. So I'm all about, let me break this down into component parts, and then let me start accomplishing the parts.
And do you set a quota for yourself, or, you know, X number of words per day or per week or something like that? Or how do you structure that piece of it in terms of, you know, it's like the 300 pushups a day. What is that kind of daily goal?
I used to have daily goals. I don't anymore, because I've gotten good enough at the process part of it and the sticking with it part that I don't need that, like a quota to keep me going. Some days it comes easier, some days it comes harder. And if you have a quota and you're thinking, wow, I need 5,000 words today and I'm only at 3,000, I've been at this for 8 hours, and how am I ever going to get there? That can cause you to give less focus or attention to stuff that you really should be working harder on. You might give short shrift to something that you should be working harder on. So I don't really do that. And what that means is that some days, let's pretend that 5,000 words a day is my goal. It's not, but let's pretend. Then if I hit 3,000 today, but I know that I was doing the right things and what I created was good, then that's okay. And because tomorrow I might do 7 or 8, because I may really get into a flow and it may come really easily. So I don't do word count totals. When I first started and I was mostly writing articles for other people as a ghostwriter, I did have some quotas for myself because it was revenue based. I knew I was going to get X amount per article, and I knew I needed X amount of money per day, per week, per month to kind of meet the targets I had for myself. And so then I definitely did break it down and say, okay, I need to do, you know, let's pretend I need to do 6 articles a day, because that's how I'm going to hit my targets. And so that's what I'm going to do. If it takes me 14 hours to get there, it takes me 14 hours to get there. If it takes me 6, then cool, I'll go ride my bike or something like that. So I think you have to adapt that to what you're doing. But early on, I think it does help to create some quotas for yourself. Otherwise, you end up fluffing around and turning the right things to do into things that you think you should do or that are more fun to do that don't actually contribute to your success.
So what would one kind of action or piece of homework be that you would give to listeners to start concretely kind of implementing some of the ideas that we've talked about today?
One of my favorite ones is really simple, and it's another one that's based on research. There are a number of studies that, and one in particular, that shows that if you want to be, let's say you want to be happier, I think that's a goal we can all probably embrace. If you write 5 times a day, if you find 5 ways to say thank you to, or to express gratitude or appreciation, or to say something positive to someone that you know, it can be a thanks for doing this. It can be a wow, you did that really well. It could be you made this difference in my life, whatever it may be. If you do that 5 times a day and you do that for 8 weeks, which sounds like a lot, but really shouldn't be if you think about it, then people's happiness set point, which we all have one, increased by about 50% over that 8 week period. So they felt happier simply by saying nice things, making a difference in other people's lives. That's a really cool thing. And that is the power of process. And that's the power of numbers, in that by doing things and accumulating numbers of those things, you can get yourself to a really cool point. So I think that would be a really fun place to start, because who doesn't want to feel like they've made a positive difference in somebody else's life? And who doesn't want to be a little bit happier?
And where can listeners find you and your various works online?
The easiest place is probably inc.com. Just search my name and you'll find about 1,300 articles or so. And my book comes out on January 9th. It's called The Motivation Myth. And it'll be on Amazon and everywhere else. And there's an audiobook version, which based on my voice, you can tell they did not ask me to read. I don't think anyone wants to hear my southern nasal twang for 3 or 4 hours. And that's pretty much it. I'm easy to find.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing all this wisdom with the listeners, tons of actionable insights and valuable ideas.
Oh, you're welcome. Can I make one more point really quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
And this applies to you, and it'll clearly resonate with you, I'm sure. You're doing the podcast, but then you're also at Fresh Hospitality. So you're an and with quotes around that word. You're a person who does this and this and this. And I think there's so much information out there that says people should specialize and they should focus and they should even hyper-focus and find these really small niches within which to succeed. And I think that's true, but I also think it's true that you can be a number of different things, either at the same time, or you can have what I call serial achievement moments, where you go and do one thing, achieve it, pick something else you're interested in, work hard and achieve that. Those are both really, really cool things. So if you're a person at home who is not as satisfied with the things you've done, want there to be more to your life, want to achieve more things, want to be more successful, however you decide to define that, because you get to define success, then just pick something you're interested in and start and create a process for yourself. Look around and find one that someone else has used that will get you started, and then put your head down and do some work. And even if it doesn't lead to anything that makes you wildly successful, you'll learn a ton along the way. You'll have fun doing it, and it may lead you to whatever it is that you choose to do next. So my best advice is always stop talking, stop thinking, stop dreaming, and just start doing, because really good things happen when you start doing.
Great advice, Jeff. Thank you so much for adding that in at the end. You know, once again, thank you for coming on the show. Great insight, great conversation. Really enjoyed having you on here.
Thanks, sir. It was awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to The Science of Success. We created this show to help you, our listeners, master evidence-based growth. I love hearing from listeners. If you want to reach out, share your story, or just say hi, shoot me an email. My email is matt@successpodcast.com. That's matt@successpodcast.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I read and respond to every single listener email. I'm going to give you 3 reasons why you should sign up for our email list today by going to successpodcast.com, signing up right on the homepage. There's some incredible stuff that's only available to those on the email list, so be sure to sign up, including an exclusive curated weekly email from us called Mindset Monday, which is short, simple, filled with articles, stories, things that we found interesting and fascinating in the world of evidence-based growth in the last week. Next, you're getting an exclusive chance to shape the show, including voting on guests, submitting your own personal questions that we'll ask guests on air, and much more. Lastly, you're going to get a free guide we created based on listener demand our most popular guide, which is called How to Organize and Remember Everything. You can get it completely for free, along with another surprise bonus guide, by signing up and joining the email list today. Again, you can do that at successpodcast.com. Sign up right at the homepage. Or if you're on the go, just text the word SMARTER, S-M-A-R-T-E-R, to the number 44222. Remember, the greatest compliment you can give us is a referral to a friend, either live or online. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us an awesome review and subscribe on iTunes, because that helps boost the algorithm, that helps us move up the iTunes rankings, and helps more people discover the science of success. Don't forget, if you want to get all the incredible information we talk about in the show, links, transcripts, everything we discuss, and much more, be sure to check out our show notes. You can get those at successpodcast.com. Just hit the show notes button right at the top. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Science of Success.